Good morning, everyone. In the early 20th century, a traveling businessman wrote to his doctor describing some of the symptoms he was experiencing. He just didn't know what was going on with him, and he thought his doctor might be able to help him. He wrote this: "It's not just my body that's tired, but my brain. I constantly feel as though an iron vise were tightening on my cranium. My head feels empty. My mind won't work. My ideas are confused and I can no longer concentrate. My memory is shot. When I read, I can't remember at the bottom of the page what I've read at the top." And no, he's not suffering from old age. "As for my will, my energy is gone. I no longer know what I want, what I'm supposed to do. I doubt, I hesitate, I don't dare make a decision. Moreover, I have no appetite, and I sleep badly." A few months ago, I was visiting a congregation where a story was shared. An older sister had grown up during the Depression, and during that time, her parents had lost the farm and had to move to town. And she tells the story that when her folks moved to town, her mother went to bed and didn't get up for 2 weeks and almost died. Back then, they called it melancholy or melancholia. And for those of you that are familiar with the idea of depression, what I read for you earlier is a textbook description of depression. We used to call it things like melancholy or melancholia. It's something that's been around for a long time. And I believe we even find evidence of it in the Bible. Take, for example, the man Job. Somebody mentioned Job, or pardon me, mentioned karma this morning in our class. I think Job is the greatest answer to the notion of karma that we have in the entire Bible, because here was a good man to whom a lot of bad things happened. See, karma says that good things happen to good people, bad things happen to bad people. Well, Job was a blameless man, upright, one who feared the Lord and shunned evil. He was as good a man as there was on the face of the earth at that time. And yet all these bad things happened to him. And in the book of Job, he describes some of the things that he's suffering. He says in chapter 6, verses 1 through 5, he describes himself being in a depressed mood every day, nearly all day. In that same chapter in verses 6 and 7, he says he's had a change in his appetite. Same chapter, verses 8 and 9, he talks about recurrent thoughts of death. Same chapter, verses 14 through 30, he describes his feeling of isolation. Chapter 3 in its entirety talks about his sense of worthlessness. And in chapter 7, verse number 4, he talks about how he can't sleep. These are the symptoms of depression. That's what we call it. But you see, it's been around for a really long time. This idea that pain and suffering can not only have spiritual effects on us, but can actually have physical effects as well. A lot of people have this notion about depression that it just means that someone's really, really sad, when in reality, there are physical symptoms that go along with it. Job described them, and others have dealt with them as well. There are no common experiences of depression. There's no common cause. Pardon me, there are common experiences of depression, but no common cause. And when we look at the case of Job, we look at what he was enduring, we can see that at the heart of Job's feelings during this time was a deep pain. A deep pain at the loss of his wealth, his health, and his children. So even though the Bible never mentions the word depression, the Bible does have a lot to say about pain and suffering. And as Christians who sometimes have to deal with depression, either personally in our own walk with the Lord, or perhaps as we support neighbors, friends, family members, I think it's important for us to understand that for many depressed people, behind their depression lies a deep, intense pain. And when it comes to pain, the Bible has a great deal to say, does it not? what is the cause for pain according to the Bible? Well, I'm going to give you several different causes for pain because I think the Bible talks a lot about the different ways we experience pain in life. Sometimes we experience pain because of things that we've done to ourselves. I mentioned this in my comment in the adult class. Galatians chapter 6, verse number 7. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. One of the laws that God has put into place in this world is that if you do something bad, it is likely that bad consequences will come as a result. If a woman spends her entire pregnancy snorting cocaine, chances are that baby, when it comes out of the womb, is going to be addicted to cocaine. Is that baby guilty for what the mother had done? By no means. But is that baby suffering the consequences? Absolutely. God has put this law into place, and it applies to both the righteous and the unrighteous. It does not discriminate. Just because you're a good person does not mean that you will avoid consequences for your sin. David talks about this in Psalm chapter 32, verses 3 through 5. And I think in this psalm we get a sense that maybe even David himself had struggled with depression. In Psalm 32, verses 3 through 5, he talks about the pain that he's suffering. He says, "When I kept silent, my bones grew old through my groaning all the day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was turned into the drought of summer. I acknowledged my sin to you, and my iniquity I have not hidden. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the iniquity of my sin." Now, it's written in poetic language, but what David is saying is, I did something bad, I held it in, I didn't confess it, but finally when I did, I found cleansing. Sin can have physical effects on our lives. David writes about this later in Psalm 38, verses 2 through 10 and verse 18. He talks about how when he held his sin in, when he did not confess it, when he bottled it up, it affected him in a physical way. And for some people, at the heart of their depression lies some sort of sin. It's not the case for all, but for some. Our rage causes divorce and subsequent aloneness. Our stealing causes imprisonment. Our addictions destroy our relationships and our bodies. Don't be surprised if you find things within yourself, things like fears and anger and selfish desires, lurking behind some depression. David experienced it, and I think we can experience it as well. Anger, especially, can be a real root of depression. Another form of suffering that we see in the Bible is suffering that's caused by other people. And indeed, a lot of those that we know that suffer from depression have been perhaps abused, perhaps mistreated, are going through that because of something that someone has done to them. And we see examples of this in the Bible as well. Let's take the case of the man Elijah in 1 Kings chapter 19, verse number 4. And just to set the stage a little bit, Elijah is on the run because he's just stood up to the prophets of Baal and Asherah in chapter 18. He's challenged them to build an altar and see if your God will respond. He builds an altar as well. His God responds. He puts to death all the prophets of Baal. And Jezebel, the wife of Ahab, is pretty upset by this because she's Phoenician. These are her prophets. And so she wants Elijah dead. So he's a man on the run. And in verse number 4, we find him going a day's journey into the wilderness. He comes underneath a broom tree. He prays. At that moment, he prays that he might die and said, "It is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's." I don't believe Elijah's suicidal. I just think Elijah feels the way some of us feel at times, where life has lost its zest, so to speak, where the troubles and the pain and the suffering have taken the joy out of life. And that's where Elijah is at this moment. He has some thoughts of death. If we go on later, down in verse number 10, when the Lord challenges him, he says, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Elijah has gone all the way to Mount Sinai. He's fled that far away from the land of Israel. He's gone to Mount Sinai to seek the Lord out. And God's like, well, why are you here, Elijah? Elijah says in verse number 10, I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts. For the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. Here's Elijah suffering at the hands of others, and how does he feel at this moment? Well, he not only has recurrent thoughts of death, but he's also suffering from a sense of isolation. I'm all by myself. There are no righteous people. Now, God goes on to correct that notion. He goes on to say, you're not alone. 7,000 knees have not bowed to Baal. So you're not alone, Elijah. And yet, Elijah, like a lot of us, had moments where he felt like he was alone. And in that sense, I think Elijah may be a good example of someone who's suffering from symptoms of depression. But depression that is brought about by the sin of another person. Because why is Elijah feeling this way? Because of Jezebel. Because he feels alienated from his nation. Because he feels like everyone else is going to follow after Baal, and he alone is following after Jehovah. It's because of the sins of others that Elijah finds himself in this place. I also think of Hannah in 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 1 through 9. If you're familiar with the story of Hannah, you know that Hannah suffered at the hand of her husband's other wife because she was barren and her husband's other wife was not. In verses 6 and 7, we get a sense of how miserable Hannah was. And her rival also provoked her severely to make her miserable because the Lord had closed her womb. So it was year by year when she went up to the house of the Lord that she provoked her. Therefore she wept and did not eat. Here is a woman who is suffering at the hands of someone else. Another woman is abusing her. Not with the hand, not striking her, but emotionally, psychologically abusing her. And how does it affect Hannah? It affects her deeply. She finds herself, in my estimation, in a depressed state as she goes to the house of the Lord. She wept and she could not eat. When we look at cases of depression, oftentimes there are folks that are suffering from depression because of what others have done to them. People betray and abuse. They make commitments and break them. They wound, they scatter, they destroy because they care about their own desires and not the interest of others. Beneath some depression, you are likely to find a person who is reeling from the sins of other people. Another reason why pain and suffering is in this world is because of time and chance. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verses 11 and 12, Solomon talks about this notion of time and chance, and I think this is something that we oftentimes overlook when we're trying to understand why bad things happen in this world. We often overlook the notion of time and chance. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verses 11 and 12, Solomon had observed something. He said, "The race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill. But time and chance happen to them all. For man also does not know his time. Like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them." I want you to go with me for a moment back to the story of Job. If you would, just entertain me on a little thought experiment, if you will. Let's pretend for a moment we didn't have chapters 1 and 2 of Job. That all we had were chapters 3 and after. So here we've got this man who has suffered a traumatic event, a series of traumatic events. And in the book of Job, he is spending his time pursuing an answer to the question, why? Why has this happened to me, God? Why me? Now, from Job's perspective, he didn't know what was going on behind the scenes, right? Because who was behind Job's suffering? Satan, right? But Job didn't know it. We get no indication in chapters 3 through 42 that Job had any idea that Satan was behind all of his wealth being taken, his children being killed, and himself being struck from head to toe with boils. We get no indication that that was the case. So if we put ourselves in Job's sandals for a moment and just survey the situation, what explanation could we come up with? For instance, how would we explain why his children died in that windstorm? Well, to me, I think Solomon offers us a perfectly legitimate explanation. Time and chance happen to everyone. God has put into place, has allowed natural evil to exist in the world. Storms happen and people die. People contract cancer and die. It's not that they're any less righteous than someone else. It just simply means that's the way the world works. And unfortunately, there are times when people are just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And maybe if we were in Job's sandals, stepping back and taking a look at the death of his children, we might conclude that they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. But Job suffered. Job suffered as a result. And as Solomon acknowledges, these are evil times that come upon us. I think of the Tower of Siloam that fell on those people. Jesus talks about this in Luke chapter 13. And he warns us, he says, do you think that those people were unrighteous? Is that the reason why you think that tower fell on them, because they were evil? Well, that had nothing to do with it. His point is, make sure that while you have the opportunity, while you have the time, that you repent, lest you perish. Because you never know what's going to happen. So circling back around, pain and suffering sometimes are caused in this world because people are just in the wrong place at the wrong time. I think of family members of those who were killed in 9/11. And all the pain and the anguish that they have endured as a result of that. I'm certain there are hundreds, if not thousands, of survivors who lost family members in that terrible tragedy that have grappled with depression since then. Why? Not because their family members were evil, but just because they happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So in my estimation, the Bible gives us several explanations for pain and suffering. It tells us that sometimes pain and suffering comes as a result of our own sin. Sometimes it comes to us as a result of the sins of others. Sometimes it comes upon us because of time and chance. But sometimes we go through suffering because of the natural processes that are going on in our body. One of the major causes of depression for some people is sickness. More than 40% of those with PTSD suffer from depression. 25% of those who have cancer suffer from depression. 27% of those with substance abuse problems suffer from depression. 50% of those with Parkinson's disease. 50 to 75% of those who have an eating disorder. 33% of those who've had a heart attack. When you don't feel good, when your body doesn't feel good, that can begin to affect more than just the particular organ or the particular part of your body that's involved. It can begin to affect your mind as well. Job alludes to this in Job chapter 7, verses 1 through 6. He talks about how the pain he was feeling in his body was beginning to affect his thinking. In Job 7, beginning in verse number 1, he says, is there not a time of hard service for man on earth? Are not his days also like the days of a hired man? Like a servant who earnestly desires his shade, and like a hired man who eagerly looks for his wages. So I have been allotted months of futility, and wearisome nights have been appointed to me. When I lie down, I say, when shall I arise and the night be ended? For I have had my fill of tossing till dawn. My flesh is caked with worms and dust. My skin is cracked and breaks out afresh. My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and are spent without hope. You see how Job's health, these boils, these very painful boils that were covering him, was affecting him deeply. He can't sleep. He's lost his appetite. And this is true for anyone who's gone through a terrible illness. It's easy to get blue. It's easy to get down. For that illness to begin affecting more than just your body. And of course, there are causes for depression that have to do with our body. I think of bipolar disorder. It used to be called manic depressive disorder, but now it's called bipolar. I'll let Charles talk about that. I feel kind of weird talking about these sorts of things in front of guys who know a lot more than I do, but bipolar disorder seems to be a malfunction within the brain itself. You've got extreme highs of euphoria and extreme lows of depression. We don't know the exact causes of things like bipolar disorder, but they've got some indications that they're physical in nature. So depression can be linked to pain and suffering that's happening in our physical bodies as well. Finally, this may seem like the most obvious answer to the question, why do people suffer in this world? But I've left it for the last because I think it's the hardest to discern when it's actually happening. The final reason why people suffer in this world is because of the work of Satan. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse number 12, Paul says, "We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." And of course, in the case of Job, we see Satan at work in Job's life, although Job isn't aware. Job has no idea. And in that respect, that makes Job a very sympathetic character to me. Because sometimes, I know in my own life, I've found myself wondering to the Lord, why me, God? Why me? Why are these things happening to me? And in that respect, I can relate to how Job feels. He didn't know that Satan was behind all these things. And yet he was. Now, the book of Job teaches us that Satan cannot affect us without the permission of God, that all these things happen under the auspices of God's sovereignty, and yet God allows these sorts of tests to come into our life. And sometimes Satan's effects can be devastating. As I begin to draw this to a close, I want to make very clear that as we think about the causes for pain and suffering and therefore the causes for depression, I want to warn us against looking for a simple answer. It's easy to think that the way someone feels is linked to perhaps just one factor. In reality, though, the causes are often, there's often more than one cause. Let me put it that way. And I think we have examples of this in the Bible. Consider the case of Joseph. Joseph, who was sold by his brothers into slavery, ends up in Potiphar's household, then ends up in jail, then finally ascends to the second most in command of the nation of Egypt. When Joseph's brothers began to get a little nervous after Jacob's death, thinking that Joseph may finally have his vengeance now that Jacob had passed away, Joseph says to his brothers, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." What I appreciate about Joseph's perspective is he looked back and he saw that what he went through, the pain and the suffering that he endured, was not simply the result of his brother's decision to sell him into slavery. He could have very easily blamed them for all the things he had gone through. And yet Joseph recognized that there was someone else at work in all this. And who was that? It was God, right? It was God's providence. When we look at the pain and suffering in our life, we shouldn't look for just one cause. In fact, I would suggest to you that perhaps there's more than one cause. That's what Joseph perceived. Joseph perceived that it was not just simply the sins of others that had brought this to pass, but it was also the very will of God that allowed this to take place. Now, let's not overlook the fact that he had reached this conclusion about God after all these amazing things had taken place, right? He could look back and he could see God's providence at work. And yet he also recognized that not only did his pain and suffering come as a result of his brother's sin, but also this was a part of God's providence at work. I also think of Paul's thorn in the flesh in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse number 7. If we go over there real quick, Paul's talking about this intense suffering. And we don't know what it was. There's a lot of speculation out there that perhaps Paul had contracted malaria on his first evangelistic journey in Acts chapters 13 and 14. He was going through a region of southern Asia Minor where malaria was prevalent. And it's speculated that that perhaps was his thorn in the flesh. None of us really know. But as you recall, he's asked the Lord to remove this three different times. He says in verse number 7, "And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure." What I find fascinating about this passage is Paul acknowledges that his pain and suffering really kind of have three different causes behind them. Number one, and he alludes to this at the end of the verse, he recognized that he had a struggle with pride. That pride was a real problem for him. And he recognized that this thorn in the flesh had been given to him to keep him humble. So Paul saw that some of this suffering was God's way of keeping him in check, so to speak, because of his own sin, or the potential for sin, I should say. But also in this verse, we see someone else at work. We see Satan at work, right? And we also see Satan allowed to work in all this by God. So Paul's pain and suffering that he went through didn't have just one explanation. It had multiple explanations. So if you have a friend or a neighbor or a brother or sister in Christ, or perhaps you yourself, if they're suffering from depression, recognize that it's not just an easy explanation. That there are often multiple factors that play into this. The cases of both Joseph and Paul, we see multiple things bringing their pain and suffering to pass. And I think the same is true for those who go through depression. A few years ago, I met a woman who was dying from cirrhosis of the liver that was due to her drinking for many, many years. She was very depressed at the time, as one can imagine. But what a lot of people didn't know about her drinking problem was she used it as a way to cope with the sexual abuse that she had suffered as a very small child. She was self-medicating. She eventually died, but I'm glad to report that she came back to the Lord before that moment. As I got to know her and looking back on her and thinking about why she was in the place she was in, I could see that there were several reasons why she had been brought to this point. Obviously, there was her own sin, the drunkenness and the addiction that comes along with it. But I also see the sins of others. You see, she was using alcohol as a way to cope because others had done terrible things to her. I also found her in this depressed state because of her own physical condition. Her illness was affecting her. I also see Galatians 6 and 7 being brought to pass before my very eyes. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. You can't spend years crawling inside of a bottle and not expect to pay some consequences for it. And I'm also glad to report that she never ran from holding herself accountable. I really admired that about her. So here I had this woman who was very depressed in front of me. And looking back, I can see that it wasn't just a simple explanation, that multiple factors had brought her to this point. And I think that that's true for a lot of people. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, we want to invite you to consider the gospel invitation this morning. Jesus came to this world to heal. He did that in the literal sense by restoring people's sight, by helping people to hear again, by helping people who were lame to walk again. But the true healing that Jesus promises is a healing that is on the inside. He came to this world to take away the guilt, the regret, the shame that comes from our own sins. Every person in this room has made mistakes. Mistakes that we look back and we shake our heads and we think, why did we do that? Why did we do that? But the good news that Jesus Christ brings to this world is, by His blood, all of those things are erased. If you're not a Christian this morning, you do not have that promise. You do not have access to that blood. You do not have the healing that Jesus Christ promises. But you can have it anytime. You can have it right now. Just stand on up. Come on up here. Anybody? Nobody. All right. Think about it. Jesus Christ wants to heal you. He wants to give you life and give it to you more abundantly. You don't have to live in guilt and shame and regret. Jesus Christ will unshackle those chains and He will liberate you and bring you in to the sweet liberty that He gives to all. If we can help you obey the gospel this morning, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.